Wherever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Trish McLaughlin, who's serving as our worship associate, and our music director, Hal Walker. We're glad to be together today and glad to welcome you to this beautiful day of celebrating our flower ceremony. If you did not remember to bring flowers with you, we do have some extras available just outside the sanctuary doors, and each person will need two flowers. So when we greet one another, if you didn't bring some with you, please take a moment to get a couple of flowers. We're especially glad to welcome those of you who are with us for the first time today. We're always happy to have guests at our services and hope that you will stay afterward for our social hour, which is held immediately following the service downstairs in Fessenden Hall. If you find that you would like more information about the life and work of this congregation, I invite you to complete a guest card, which you can find in the racks and the pews before you. You may place your completed card in the offering basket when it comes to you later in the service, or hand it to a representative of our membership committee who would be happy to greet you at the welcome table, which is just around the corner outside the sanctuary doors. Ours is a church that strives to practice the fragile art of hospitality. And so in that spirit, I invite you to take a moment to turn and greet your neighbors. In addition to asking you to silence your cell phones, I'd like to direct your attention to the thread from the web. That is the insert in your order of service. There you'll find several announcements as well as a calendar of events for the week ahead in the church. Our chalice lighting this morning is based on a sermon given by the Reverend Donald Xantho Harrington at the service in Symphony Hall in Boston, celebrating the merger of the Unitarians and the Universalists, which was 50 years ago today. 50 years ago today, Universalism and Unitarianism in America combined to form the Unitarian Universalist Association. This milestone moment, as one leader of the time put it, envisioned a religious family of congregations and people dedicated to a faith that would be history-making rather than history-bound. Over the last 50 years, Unitarian Universalists have made religious history at Selma in courageous interfaith action for justice, in the women and religion movement, in pioneering efforts on behalf of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender rights, in environmental activism, and more. Therefore, seeing that we are compassed round by so great a cloud of witnesses, the great of past and present, and all the humble heroes who worked and sacrificed beside them, who indeed held up their hands and made strong their voices, let us now, in our own day, take up with faith and joy the urgent tasks to which this historic hour has summoned us. Let us together build the free and universal church of tomorrow.
And now we will partake in the flower ceremony. And how we're going to do this is each of you have two flowers to share, and you'll be sharing them in two ways. We're going to be asking the folks in the front rows, we're going to go front to back, to come up and place one flower in the vase. And then your other flower, you're going to give to someone as you travel back down the outside of the sanctuary. Give your flower to someone who you don't know. And as we get through this, and if you still need a flower, then raise your hand. And it might be a little complicated, but that's okay. So at sometimes you're going to have two flowers. Sometimes you might have three flowers. Sometimes you might have no flowers and waiting for a flower. But it will all work out. And while we're doing this ritual, we're going to be singing the song, "From you I receive, to you I give. Together we share, from this we live."
Chapek wrote a consecration for the flowers. I invite you to join together now in the spirit of gratitude for one another. Infinite spirit of life, we ask thy blessing on these, thy messengers of fellowship and love. May they remind us, amid diversities of knowledge and of gifts, to be one in desire and affection and devotion to thy holy will. May they also remind us of the value of comradeship, of doing and sharing alike. May we cherish friendship as one of thy most precious gifts. May we not let awareness of another's talents discourage us or sully our relationship, but may we realize that whatever we can do, great or small, the efforts of all of us are needed to do thy work in this world. Amen. Our wisdom words for meditation come from the Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh. The most precious gift we can offer one another is our presence. When mindfulness embraces those we love, they will bloom like flowers. We'll keep silent now for a few moments together. Most often I invite you to join me now in the spirit of prayer, but today I'd like to invite you to join together in a guided meditation. This is also from Thich Nhat Hanh. It has several elements, and I'm going to lead you if you'll participate in three. So to begin, you'll need your feet flat on the floor and your hands resting on your thighs with your palms up and softly open. Sit up as tall as you can and feel as though you're reaching up through the crown of your head. And you can either close your eyes or, if you prefer, just lower your gaze down, lower your gaze downward. This meditation begins with a focus on your breath. Breathe in, focusing your attention on the breath you are taking and nothing else. And then breathe out, focusing your attention on your release of breath and nothing else. Keep repeating this pattern at your own pace, breathing in and breathing out. If it helps you to focus, you can say to yourself, breathing in, I know I am breathing in. Breathing out, I know I am breathing out. And when you feel comfortable with that, you might like to try another phrase. Breathing in, I see myself as a flower. Breathing out, I feel fresh. All of us were born pure and beautiful as flowers, but because we don't always take care of ourselves as well as we might like, that's why sometimes our flower feels tired, why we sometimes wither a bit. Breathing in like this refreshes our flower. Makes it beautiful again. Breathing in, I see myself as a flower. Breathing out, I feel fresh. We know that flowers need space around them in order to be happy and grow into their full potential. And people are like that too. We need space, not only around us, but inside of us too. If we're so filled up with emotions, filled up with anger and hatred, fear and grasping, then we don't have enough space inside of us to grow into our full potential. Therefore, the practice is to let go in order to have space. We also need to give the people we love space too, so they can grow into their full potential. And so you might like to try this phrase. Breathing in, I see myself as space. Breathing out, I feel free. And as you return your attention now to this space, honor yourself for the gift of mindfulness you've given yourself, and remember, it's a gift you can always give away.
Keeping Quiet by Pablo Neruda. And now we will count to 12, and we will all keep still. For once on the face of the earth, let's not speak any language. Let's stop for 1 second and not move our arms so much. It would be an exotic moment without rush, without engines. We would all be together in a sudden strangeness. Fishermen in the cold sea would not harm whales, and the man gathering salt would not look at his hurt hands. What I want should not be confused with total inactivity. Life is what it's about. I want no truck with death. If we were not so single-minded about keeping our lives moving and for once could do nothing, perhaps a huge silence might interrupt this sadness of never understanding ourselves and of threatening ourselves with death. Perhaps the earth can teach us, as when everything seems dead and later proves to be alive. Now, I'll count up to 12, and you keep quiet, and I will go.
Isn't it lovely to have our hymns accompanied by flute? In addition to the piano. We're really glad you're here. This reading is from the Gospel according to Luke. Now as they went on their way, he entered a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She had a sister named Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to what he was saying. But Martha was distracted by her many tasks, so she came to him and asked, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her then to help me." But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you are worried and distracted by many things. There is need of only one thing. Mary has chosen the better part, which will not be taken away from her." What do you make of this story? For years, a common interpretation has been that this is a story about two choices for women, the active life and the contemplative life. Martha is the busy worker. When Jesus shows up at the home she shares with her sister, she immediately invites him in and begins tending to the many preparations. Mary never ventures into the kitchen to help, but instead takes a seat with the men to listen to Jesus talk. As time goes on, with no sign of her sister coming to help, Martha grows increasingly aggravated. I can just see her rushing around, trying to fetch the water, tend the fire, do the preparations for the meal, stressed out by all the work she has to do. I imagined her deciding to ask Jesus to intervene, confident that he will see that she's in need of a little assistance. And I imagine her surprise and embarrassment when Jesus praises her sister for doing the better part. There she is, knocking herself out to be hospitable and do the right thing, and Jesus comments upon her worry and distraction. Of course she's distracted. Who else is going to do all the work? Now, in order to understand why Martha is so stressed, we have to note that it's not just Jesus and his 12 disciples who have unexpectedly arrived for dinner, but also a gang of 70 others who are traveling with him. This is a huge crowd, and they're going to want to eat and maybe even spend the night. There's a lot of work to do, and still, Jesus praises Mary for her choice to sit and listen and be with him. Given this context, many traditional interpretations have cast this story as praise for the contemplative life over the active life, as affirmation of the importance of faith over works, as valuing devotion over service. But recently, in recent decades, people have begun to ask whether this is really what Jesus meant to communicate, especially feminist theologians and biblical scholars. Knowing that Jesus regularly taught about the importance of service and hospitality, how can we understand his lack of support for Martha? One approach has focused on the Greek word that's translated as distracted. The text tells us that Martha was distracted by her many tasks. The literal translation for that word means to be anxious, to be unduly concerned. Perhaps Jesus is not criticizing Martha for her endeavor to be hospitable, but rather for the frenetic and anxious energy she brings to her service. "Martha, Martha," Jesus says, "you are worried and distracted by many things. There is need of only one thing." What is that one thing? That's a debate that theologians have. Some say that Jesus was referring to the meal, that instead of preparing many dishes, he was saying one dish will suffice. Others think he's referring to a spiritual goal, one spiritual goal that's worthy of pursuit. I'm intrigued by an interpretation that puts those two together, that suggests that if Martha had chosen one dish to prepare, a more simple meal, then she would also have time to sit with Jesus and tend her spirit. So maybe this is a story about being grounded, centered, mindful in the work that we choose. Another rereading of the story looks at this text in the context of Luke's gospel as a whole. Immediately preceding this story is the story of the Good Samaritan, which we shared on Easter a few weeks ago. In that story, Jesus clearly affirms the value of doing, helping, working, acting out of a place of compassion for all people. In the very next breath, literally, as soon as that story is done, this story begins about Mary and Martha, which affirms the value of listening, being, and presence. Maybe the message is not that being present to the Spirit is more important than living a life of service. Maybe the juxtaposition of those two stories is a message that we need balance, the active life, doing and serving, and the contemplative type life, being, reflecting. That's how the distinguished scholar and preacher Fred Craddock interprets the story in that context following the parable of the Good Samaritan. If we censure Martha too harshly, he writes, she may abandon serving altogether. And if we commend Mary too profusely, she may sit there forever. There is a time to go and do. There is a time to listen and reflect. Knowing which and when is a matter of spiritual discernment. It's a matter of our priorities. I know that if I asked, nearly every one of you would say that your lives are busy. We might even do so with a bit of pride in our industry. Our nation has been deeply influenced by the Protestant work ethic Europeans brought with them when they immigrated to this land. We know that there's a time to work, but the message that I have to offer you today is that there's also a time to rest. And I don't just mean any kind of rest. When we think of rest, most often we think of leisure activities. Did you know that there's a measure of leisure activities you can go look up? It's done by the U.S. Department of Labor, which has a Bureau of Labor Statistics. Every year, they conduct a U.S. time survey to measure the amount of time the average person in our country spends working, shopping, doing household chores, caring for children, and in leisure activities. And you can actually separate each one of those out and look at charts and graphs and statistics. The most recent statistics report that of people over age 15, women average 5.1 hours per day in pursuit of leisure, while men average 5.8 hours per day. That's surprising to me. I don't know if it's surprising to you. Where do we find that time? Now, granted, it's an average, but it seems important to note that these are self-reported statistics. They actually call people and ask them, and they keep a time diary, and they, down to the minute, how did you spend the last 24 hours? And that's where they get these statistics. So people say that of that leisure time, nearly half of it is spent watching television for the average person who completes that U.S. time survey. But the Nielsen company, who actually measures how much time people have their televisions on, say that the average person spends close to 5 hours a day watching television. People routinely, I understand, underreport how much time we spend doing these things. And it's important to note that the screen time that's measured doesn't include the amount of time people spend playing video games or computers or surfing the web. Now, I don't mean to suggest that relaxing in front of a screen is a bad use of time. Thanks to some of you posting on Facebook, I myself have been hooked on Glee and like to watch it in front of Hulu. It's fun to watch that show. But I know that the time I spent doing so is mostly time tuning out. And the kind of rest that I'm talking about today is time spent tuning in. It's about not about escaping, but rather about delving into the moment. It's about paying attention to our breath, to the beauty of the flowers, to the music in worship, to the food we are eating, to the music we're hearing, to the movement of wind on water. It's about listening deeply, opening fully, being completely in the present with whomever we are with, doing whatever it is we are doing, tuning in, taking Sabbath time. It might include doing, but primarily the emphasis is on being. This is the kind of real rest that provides refreshment for our hearts and minds and spirits too. Finding the time for that kind of time is a matter of priorities. It's a matter of spiritual discernment. It's a matter of finding and keeping our balance so that we can live our lives in alignment with our values. And that's one of the primary reasons that we encourage the members of this congregation to attend worship regularly. I know that there's lots of competition for this hour on Sunday mornings. There are hikes to take and soccer games to play and thick newspapers waiting to be read. But here in this space, every week, no matter who's leading the service and no matter the topic, here we uphold the importance of Sabbath time. Sometimes the sermons are great and sometimes they're just okay. Sometimes the music is polished and sometimes it's a little rough around the edges. We can't promise perfection, but we can promise persistence. Week after week, we persist in keeping the Sabbath. With songs of praise and words of gratitude, we keep the Sabbath. With the light of the chalice and the quiet we are able to keep together, we keep the Sabbath. With the presence of one another to keep us company and remind us that we don't have to do it alone, we keep the Sabbath. We come together to rest and also to remember that we are but a tiny part of something so much larger than ourselves and more enduring than the span of our own lives. We come together to remember what really matters to us and to pledge again to spend our time and money and energy in ways that affirm and support that to which we most want to be loyal. Keeping the Sabbath is one time-tested way to regularly reorient our choices in alignment with our own hearts. It's one way we can trust to help us find and keep our balance. Sometimes we need to go and do, and sometimes we need to stop and be, to tune in and be mindful. And so I leave you with these words from Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's one of the leading mindfulness teachers in our country today. He speaks often about the importance of stopping, about how stopping all of our activity is what mindfulness is really about. These are his words. When you stop, you actually become more alive now. This is what stopping can do. There's nothing passive about it, because when you decide to go again, it's a different kind of going because you have stopped. The stopping actually makes the going more vivid, richer, more textured. It helps keep all the things we worry about and feel inadequate about in proper perspective. Stopping gives us guidance. May it be so, and amen. Last Sunday, I let you know about the wind that had damaged the belfry and asked if anybody would like to contribute to a capital repairs fund to begin work fixing the belfry. I'm delighted and so grateful to tell you that we collected over almost $5,000 last week, and the work on the belfry has begun. Ed Stolish has been managing that, and I want to lift up his time and attention that he's given to doing that. Thank you, Ed. We're grateful. We're also grateful for the work of Mary and Randy Leeson and Sandy Eaglin, who put together a wonderful service auction fundraiser last night, The Light Bites, which was a Reader's Theater dinner event that I understand is now on track to become an annual event. These are just two of the many ways in which the people who are part of this community serve one another and the larger community that we share. If you're our guest this morning, we have a gift for you as a token of our hospitality. There's a candle in the basket. We're glad you're with us. The offering will now be gratefully received. These are the words of the prophet Isaiah. For you shall go out in joy and be led back in peace. The mountains and the hills before you shall burst into song, and all the trees of the field shall clap their hands. Go in peace. Amen.